fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we feature an informal debate on the newly passed Wisconsin state budget, expected to be signed this weekend by Governor Scott Walker. The budget passed the Republican-led Assembly with a 55-42 vote. It squeaked through the Republican-led Senate on a 17-16 vote, with one Republican senator, Dale Schultz of La Crosse, joining all of the Democrats in opposition. This budget cuts income taxes. It increases public school spending. It expands private school vouchers statewide, freezes UW tuition, rejects federal money for Medicaid expansion, moves Wisconsin to a multi-vendor system for student software, helping Skyward of Stevens Point. It approves a 1% wage increase for public employees, postpones a controversial measure limiting challenges to high-capacity wells. It speeds up public land sales, funds a cleanup study for the Peyton Well and Castle Rock flowages, allows bail bondsmen, defunds the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and defunds student government. Another controversial bill makes it more difficult to get an abortion in Wisconsin by requiring women to first undergo an ultrasound. Joining us for a freewheeling discussion in our Wisconsin Public Radio studio, 72nd District State Representative Scott Krug, Republican of Wisconsin Rapids, and 85th District State Representative Mandy Wright, Democrat of Wausau. There's a lot of ground to cover here, and we know you have opinions. If you'd like to tell our representatives what you think about the state budget live on the air, this is your chance. You can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Scott and Mandy, thanks so much for being with us, and I really like the fact that you are both here live in this studio so we can look each other in the eyes, and it's going to be much better than taking one or both of you by telephone. So Thanks for making your time available to us today.
Absolutely. That was my pleasure.
Now, the two of you have vastly different opinions about what just happened in Madison. Scott, you said in a news release, and I'm quoting from it, "It's a good day for Wisconsin families, taxpayers, students, and residents. Through years of tough choices, we weathered the storm and came through being able to fund our priorities appropriately." And you mentioned specifically Skyward and that delay in high-capacity wells as two of the things that you're happy with. Mandy, your news release was headlined, "Assembly Republicans Rubber Stamp Extreme Anti-Middle Class Budget," which you say creates, quote, "a statewide taxpayer-funded private school system and a health care plan that will charge taxpayers more to cover fewer people," and, quote, "a massive tax cut giving even more money to those who are already economically advantaged. That is simply unfair." So let's hear the two of you defend your overview. So, Mandy, why don't we start with you, and then, Scott, you can tell us what you think.
Sure. Thank you very much, Glenn, for the opportunity. First of all, I do want to acknowledge that there are some good things in this budget. I'm very happy about the funding for the Medical College of Wisconsin, $7.4 million, split between Wausau and Green Bay. The Medical College of Wisconsin also got $2.3 million for 12 primary care residency slots, an important issue here in the Northwoods. And I'm very happy to see that the Skyward issue was resolved, that we will have a multi-vendor system, and that was able that enabled us to save over 300 jobs in Wisconsin. I'm also glad that a couple really important things got fixed. There were some things I was really concerned about. First of all, there was a provision to phase out property tax reimbursement levels for disabled veterans and spouses, mm-hmm. and that was deleted in an amendment. There's also something called Fund 80 for our public schools, which funds our after-school programs, pools, really important recreation programs in the summer, and that was resolved so that school districts can still leverage that, as well as my county contacted me about serious issues with child support funding, that got cut in the last budget, and that funding was restored so that families can continue to collect child support for their kids.
But you still voted against that budget.
Absolutely. I mean, all that being said and all those good things, overall, I'm very concerned about this budget. Number one is that this budget actually does have a property tax increase, and that's not being talked about very much. Also, I'm very concerned about...
Well, explain that to me.
There is you know, we go back and forth. But in the Legislative Reference Bureau, we had the opportunity to ask them, actually the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which is nonpartisan, we asked, is there a property tax increase in this budget? And yes, it's about 1%. It's not large, but the fact is that there is a property tax increase.
Is that across the board for all property in Wisconsin?
I can add in. It's going to be a $29 average increase for the median value home. When you see your tax bill come in January, whatever time you get it, you'll see, you know, an extra $29 if you have an average value home. I don't want to cut into too many of the things Mandy's talking about, but that's offset, I think, by the income tax cuts that we make also. So in the end, the average taxpayer is going to see a decrease, even though there will be a bump in the property tax.
Okay. Mandy, continue.
Sure. Also, as long as we're talking about taxes, there is the income tax cut. So first of all, we'll be decreasing revenues. There's a $505 million deficit in this budget. And the way that this income tax works out is that people who make over $300,000 a year will get approximately $120 reimbursed a month. People who are closer to the median family income or individual income of about $50,000 will get less than $10 a month. So we're talking about a 10-time tax cut for people who are definitely of a higher income. And I'm not completely opposed to tax cuts. In fact, I've toured a lot of small businesses in the district. I hear a lot of concerns about taxes, especially for our small businesses, our job creators. We all know we won't have the paper industry and the insurance industry to rely on the same way. But I'd really like to see those much more targeted and focused instead of just across the board based on income. Of course, I'm also extremely concerned about the statewide expansion of vouchers. It is estimated that will cost $240 million in overall private school funding. That's including the $30 million tax cut. So it's really a lot of money to be funding private schools, which don't have the same accountability measures as our public schools. Also, there's the health care. There's the rejection of the federal funds. For Medicaid, thank you. In Marathon County alone, the Department of Health Services estimates that 2,684 people, Marathon County alone, will lose access to Badger Care. It's almost 2,000 people in Wood County. So that's significant. We're actually spending more money. It's been estimated $120 million we're actually spending to make sure that we cover fewer people. And there are jobs associated with that. I've heard over 1,000 jobs in Marathon County, 10,000 jobs statewide in the healthcare profession.
All right, we're going to focus on all of those areas individually. But, Scott, why don't you go now and give me your general overview of the budget, what you like about it, what you don't like about it.
Well, I think I liked everything that Mandy liked, so, I mean, that was a good start. No, I'm just kidding.
Thanks.
You know, one of the things that I really went into this process was trying to make sure that citizen input from my district was heard. So I think we've done 32 listening sessions across my district about this budget process, talked to school districts, talked to businesses, talked to everybody in between about what they wanted to see out of the process. I made sure that we took away some local wins in this budget because knowing the winds of change and how things sweep through Madison, the big item issues, you know, there's going to be less debate on. Those are the governor's pet projects sometimes, and those are things you may not be able to see a lot of changes on. So we decided to make that focus on a lot of local things for my district and some of the things that Mandy talked about that I fought for, the child support funding, making sure people could be more self-sustainable by making sure that support's in place. We did a lot of stuff for, the Skyward issue was huge. I mean, we don't ever see a very direct impact from a bill that we passed in the State Assembly. This one had a direct impact on jobs, immediate impact. 270 jobs right now. They're talking about expanding to 600 more jobs.
And it was really questionable whether you could get that done.
Yeah, it took every ounce of political capital I had to make sure that one got through. I mean, you're talking to a company that has a $200 million impact in our region. I mean, that was huge. It was a great win for us. The K-12 funding we increased by $300 million, first year $150 per year for per student, $150 the second year. High-cost transportation aids for my rural schools. The high-capacity well issue spent a lot of capital making sure we put that off at least one more year. That's a massive issue in my district. I have $6 billion worth of agriculture in my district. So we try to focus on those local wins and make sure that, the big ticket items were something we could get on board with. And I think the tax cuts are going to make a difference. You're talking jobs, you're talking growth, you're talking a bigger slice of the pie that when those revenues come in, we can fund our, other issues even bigger. We can talk, more funding for transportation without having to bond for it all the time. We can, appropriately fund our correction systems, our UW systems. And
when those revenues come in with tax cuts,
those revenues.
A tax cut decreases revenue. It doesn't increase
immediately, and that's why you're going to see a $500 million structural deficit off the top, because that's considered spending when you send that money back to the people who sent it to you. So what you're going to see is, with those monies going back to the people who are spending it, you're going to see those revenues increase on the backside. And you're going to see, you know, if you see an extra 1% of growth over projections, you're going to wipe out that $500 million deficit pretty quick. We did that last session. We had a projected zero structural deficit from the beginning and ended up with a $550 million surplus. So the same theory was in place. It's, let's make sure that we can have provisions for growth within this budget to get rid of the structural deficit, fund things appropriately across the board. Yeah, would we like to see more funding for some things? Absolutely. Is there the money to do it right now? No, it's not all there right now. So those are the things we focused on. I think, you know, there's a lot more local things that you talked about, even with the Lake Pete and Well cleanup, some environmental protections for my district. So, you know, overall, it's a good document. And I think we'll get into some of the, you know, other issues as we go along. So I'll leave those for later discussion.
Republican Scott Krug, he's a state representative from the Wisconsin Rapids area, and Democrat Mandy Wright, state representative from the Wausau area. They are here to talk about the state budget. They have different views. I'm sure you've got views, too. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's take a call on something that you both agree on. We'll go to Brad in Portage City, who has a comment about the state's move back to a multi-vendor student software information system. Brad, you're on Route 51. Hello, Brad. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. That was my fault. I had the wrong button pushed here.
All right. Okay. Great. Yeah, I just wanted to point out that a couple of years ago, during the last budget session, Representative Krug voted for that budget, and in that budget, it called for a single vendor student information system, which would have created a monopoly here in the state of Wisconsin with regard to the student information system. And that was something that Julie Wausau has been dead set against for the last several years. She's been working to get a multi-vendor student information system for our schools back in the budget, and that resulted in this bill that was created in the last several months that was inserted into the budget. So I just wanted to know, I know Scott Krug now has changed his tune, and now he's for multi-vendor, and I just wondered why, a couple years ago, why he was in support of Monopoly student information system.
All right, Brad,
now
thanks.
He's changed his tune.
Brad, thanks so much for the call. We'll let Scott Krug respond. Scott?
Yeah, Brad, thanks for the call. It was definitely one of those things that was in the budget, and as a freshman legislator, sometimes you do miss some things in the budget. It was something that I made a promise to the people at Skyward to go back and fix. Similar to that, in the last budget, there was provision for statewide school expansion or statewide voucher expansion based on a formula. That was also in the budget, and went back and fixed that immediately after the budget as well. There's things in a budget that you're going to see that aren't perfect for you, but you have to realize, you know, is it a deal breaker, is it not? At that point in time, there were enough provisions in the budget to me to vote for the way it went down.
So you were willing to jeopardize Skyward?
No, I don't think I was. I think the agreement that we had, especially even with that voucher program that was in the last budget, is that we'd go back and fix the issue. And that was something that we were willing to do from the beginning, is go back and fix any problems that existed in the budget. You'll see it at this time, too, that there's things in this budget that will probably go back and be revisited, too, because not everybody's always on board with every provision in the budget.
Brad, thanks so much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And, well, let me let's go back to the Skyward issue. It was in the budget, right? But this is a policy decision.
Right.
A policy decision that you're going to go from a multi-vendor system to a single-vendor system. Why do things like that even get lumped into a state budget?
It's the inertia of government.
You and every legislator in a position where you can vote against it,
right?
But if you do, you got to vote against everything in that budget.
Yeah, that's the problem with budgets, is there's provisions that we like, provisions we don't like, and you have to decide where your line is, where the deal breaker is, what the bottom line problem that you're going to have to deal with after this vote for the budget or vote against the budget would be. And, you know, like I mentioned, you know, at the time I was a freshman, you don't know almost every budget provision in a state budget when you're a freshman. You don't know the totality of them. When you have a chance to go back and review after you've had your first state budget, you realize that some mistakes have been made. And, you know, it takes, you know, the right type of person to say, yeah, we made a mistake.
Would you say this is the thing you're most proud of? Because a lot of people didn't think Skyward was going to come out of this situation intact as a Wisconsin company.
Yeah, nobody did. Honestly, Glenn, up until the day the Joint Finance voted on it, I didn't think it could happen either. But, you know, it does go to prove that, you know, citizen input does have an impact. When enough people called me or enough people saw me on doors knocking the last summer that this was an issue for them, I decided to take it on, work with Julie Lossa, work with Katrina Shanklin, work with Amy Verwink, and make that issue something that we can all get together and make a difference on.
And, Mandy, this is one of those interesting issues, interesting to me as a reporter, because it cuts across party lines. We're so used to everything being so partisan, and the Republicans all stick together and the Democrats stick together. But this idea, going back to this multi-vendor system, drew support from Republicans and Democrats.
Well, absolutely. And I do think that we can definitely consider this a win for central Wisconsin and a real bipartisan effort. I would, however, say, though, as well, that keep in mind the context of, you know, complete Republican control in Madison at all three levels of government. And so, you know, to say that, well, I'm glad that we amended this in the budget. Well, I'm glad, too. But why was it ever in the budget? Because for the past 6 months of this session, there's been complete control. And really last year as well, with some back and forth.
As a teacher, how do you react when State School Superintendent Tony Evers says that a single vendor system makes more sense when you're comparing achievement levels between districts? The single vendor thing didn't come out of thin air. It was supported not only by Governor Scott Walker, it was supported by State School Superintendent Tony Evers, who has a lot of liberal support.
And the Department of Administration. I think there's really a lot of backstory to all this. It goes back a long way, and while I certainly support the multi-vendor resolution to the whole situation, because I do think that the Skyward jobs are absolutely critical for central Wisconsin, we can't lose that on top of all the other job losses we've had. I do understand the reasoning as well, and that really is that we want to be comparing apples to apples. We see a lot of students switching between districts, choosing different schools in their neighborhood, and after all, now with the statewide expansion of vouchers and public funding of private schools, if we don't have the same data set to compare, it's hard for parents to really make a good decision about where is the best education for their child. So I understand the reasoning behind it, but I'm also really happy with the resolution.
Democrat Mandy Wright and Republican Scott Krug, let's go back to the phones, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Rick in Nakusa, you're on Route 51 with Scott Krug and Mandy Wright.
Yes, I'd like the Assemblyman please to comment on the expenditures in for the corrections system. It seems like I think it's the proposed budget was $1,278,000,000 spent on corrections. That's roughly equivalent to what we spend on the UW system. I'm wondering if that money could be a better spent in a different approach rather than, you know, kind of lock them up and throw away the key for nonviolent offenders or, you know, people with mental health issues if different programs would be more effective. So I guess I would like input from the Assembly's members and what their views are on that issue.
All right, Rick, thanks so much for the phone call. And, Mandy, why don't we start with you? I think there are two things here. Could the money have been better spent on education, mental health, social services? And when you educate people, maybe you don't have to lock them up later.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Rick. I do think this is a really important question, especially in Marathon County, where we are facing jail overcrowding and have recently approved the allocation of another judge, but don't have a courtroom to give that judge. So, yeah, absolutely, we need to address this and many other issues and corrections. And it's true, we have two times in Wisconsin, two times the prison population as Minnesota has. And so clearly there are better ways to deal with people who are breaking laws and offending. And I think it's really important that we focus on education and prevention and how we can rehabilitate people so they can get back to their families and be productive members of society. One of the most interesting things I learned about corrections is the greatest indicator for a child ending up in prison is if they have a parent in prison. And so I think about that a lot as you're right. Do we really need to lock up all these people? Many of them are parents. Certainly we don't want to compromise public safety, but are there ways to get them back in the community, back in their jobs, back parenting their kids, so that we can stave off more problems in the future?
Scott Krug.
Yeah, you know, Rick, I'm glad you called. It's a conversation you and I have had before, and I appreciate the chance to get it out in public. But, you know, my background's in corrections. I came from the Wood County Jail as a discharge planner. Used to work in some other programs, too, and trying to make sure that we had nonviolent offenders taken care of differently in the system. And I think one of the other biggest wins I can, you know, talk about for me in the state budget was that we allocated $2 million more for treatment and alternative diversion programs. Making sure that counties that have big problems or ongoing problems with drug abuse, such as Washera County, is one of the growing counties with heroin problems, making sure that they have the funding to address these issues outside of the criminal justice system in a treatment program that is more beneficial to not only the county as far as the cost, but also to the offender as far as the rehabilitation. There's a lot of other things we'll be working on this session, too, trying to make sure that community corrections is a bigger alternative or a bigger use than our state prison system. Making sure people are monitored within our communities by probation parole officers, that they can have a job, that they can be involved with their families, that they can have financial opportunities in the communities while still being monitored effectively. Those are things that I've talked to a lot of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle about working on together, actually. And, you know, it's a new idea for a lot of people in my caucus that we have to try to do some selling on yet. But I think the time is now to reallocate those funds and that attention. The pendulum swings from treatment to corrections to punishment a lot, and I think it's time to swing it back towards treatment a little bit
more. It costs a lot of money to lock people up.
Yeah, it does. It costs about half as much to treat them and to turn them into better self-sustaining individuals.
Scott Krug, Republican from Wisconsin Rapids. Mandy Wright, Democrat from Wausau. Two different opinions on the state budget, and we're interested in your opinion. 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Stevens Point Area Co-op, supplying Whole Foods to Central Wisconsin since 1972, with local organic produce, bulk foods, and fresh baked goods, on the corner of 4th Avenue and 2nd Street, Stevens Point.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. If you're a regular listener to this show, this is the last program you're going to hear at 5 o'clock on Thursdays. Starting in July, we are moving to 10 a.m. on Thursdays, which we're really excited about because in radio that's known as prime time. We are going to increase our audience, and the show will be the same. The time will be different. That's Thursdays at 10 o'clock. We're taking July 4th off, and we'll be back with you live again on July 11th. Today on Route 51, we are talking about the state budget with Republican Scott Krug and Democrat Mandy Wright. Let's get into the meat of this stuff right now. Let's talk about these tax cuts. Scott, in a bullet point, you stressed that there's an income tax cut for all taxpayers at every income tax rate. Is decreased, that one tax bracket and unnecessary special interest tax breaks are eliminated. Mandy, as you just said, you think it's unfair. You think it's disproportionately aimed at the rich. People with more than $300,000 a year getting $1,440 on average back. Well, if you've got a medium income, it's only $109 per year. So, defend that for me. Why should something that sounds that unfair be something that we should vote for?
Well, you can bend the numbers any way you want. I think the biggest thing to take away from this is that the biggest income tax rate cut comes for those between $20,000 and $200,000. That's where the biggest tax rate cut is coming from. So anybody in that rate is going to pay the same amount across the board from $20,000 to $200,000. The smaller cut came for those individuals above $200,000. So, yeah, there still is a cut for those individuals, but it's not as big percentage of a cut as it is for the majority of the middle-class taxpayers in Wisconsin. So when you couple those things together, yeah, you could say that somebody who's making more is going to get more money back because of a tax cut, which, yeah, it is true that somebody who's making more money and paying more in the tax is going to get it back. But the majority and the focus of this provision was to make sure that anybody between $20,000 and $200,000, which we typically call the middle class, see the biggest income tax rate cut.
Mandy?
Sure. Scott's right. You can spin the numbers a lot of different ways. And I just, talking to most people in the district doing a lot of doors, people are more concerned about property taxes than income taxes. And so if we're going to make income tax cuts, it's going to disproportionately affect different parts of our society. And when I think about the people who really need those tax cuts and would really benefit from them, sure, it is people who own small businesses. Absolutely. I'm on the small business committee and I hear about that all the time, and I absolutely agree that we need to address that situation. But it's also our farmers who own a lot of property and have small farms and are really struggling to make ends meet. It's people who have bought homes in our community and now have lost jobs. And so they're struggling to pay for their property taxes and stay in their homes and avoid foreclosure and deal with health care and costs and all sorts of other burdens. And so I just don't see that this tax cut, for the amount that we're losing in revenue especially, I mean, $505 million, it's a lot, $500 million, I do not see that that supports growth in our community.
Well, the argument is that the income tax is a progressive tax, which means that you ought to be funding government, if you take that point of view, with the income tax, because the people who are wealthiest, the people who have the most resources, will be paying the most. But sales tax, property tax, a number of other taxes hit the poor, or with property tax, hit the elderly disproportionately. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to do tax cuts, Scott, isn't that where we should be focusing?
Yeah, and I think it was a big focus of this budget. We've seen budgets in the past that ended up with billions of dollars in structural deficits and even higher increases in property taxes. So, you know, the point of the last budget and this budget is to put basically a property tax cap in place. Less than 1% was seen to be a reasonable number. I mean, we've seen property tax increases in, you know, the 4 to 5% before. We see our school districts raising their property taxes 3 to 4%. We see our tech districts typically raising taxes 3 to 4%. This time, those school districts and those tech districts aren't doing that. I mean, those are staying flat or increasing just a small amount. So when you look at the overall property tax effect for the average property taxpayer in the state of Wisconsin, it's not going to be any different than it was in the last budget, because the school districts and the technical college taxing districts aren't increasing their levies as high as they were before.
Why pass any tax cut when we just got out of a terrible fiscal crisis? Shouldn't we be squirreling that money away in a rainy day fund?
And that's the nice thing, is we still were able to do that. We have a statutory requirement to fulfill that. Anytime we have a surplus from one budget to the next, we have to put at least half of that surplus into that fund. We met the requirement, and we're still able to give a tax cut back, keep a structural deficit that's within a percent of growth to be eliminated. I think when you look at the finances behind the structure of the state budget, I think people will be happy with the way that's going to turn out in the end. Because, like I said before, we've had budgets in the last 3-4 years. That have had billions of dollars structural deficit, $5 billion tax increases. This one is something that we can stomach. This is something we can handle. Yeah, there's even conservatives who aren't happy with some of the numbers mm-hmm. in the state budget. But it's not our job to represent just conservatives or just the folks on the right wing. It's try to make sure that everybody's priorities are funded, and it gets to the point where you have to have some revenues at some point.
You believe that that tax cut will pay for itself eventually?
I do.
Mandy, do you buy into that? That supply side economics, trickle down economics.
Yeah, I absolutely disagree with that, and I think it's been disproven by many economic experts who understand it much better than I do. But my understanding is that, to increase jobs, we want more demand. We want demand for services and products. And we don't have demand if the average person doesn't have spending money in their pocket. And I understand that, the argument is that this income tax credit will put more spending money in everyone's pocket. But proportionally, when we're talking about less than $10 a month, I don't think that most people are really going to go out and buy more services or products. I would also just like to add that it is serious that we are creating this structural deficit, and we are increasing taxpayer-supported bonding by $350 million, according to Republican State Representative Steve Nass, who voted against the budget.
Hold that thought. I want to go to Justin and Stephen's Point, which has a question about that bonds provision. Justin, you're on Route 51.
Yes, I had a question for Representative Krug that I believe 2 years ago sponsored a bill that would have provided bondsmen in the state of Wisconsin. It didn't make it out of committee, but it's either back in the budget, and I was wondering if Representative Krug is still in favor of that, even though Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen is against it, and Scott Walker is also commented that he's also against that as well.
All right, all right. It's a different issue. I saw the word bonds and misunderstood what the question was about. Bail bondsman, it's in this budget. Where do you come down on
that? Yeah, Justin, great question. It is a bill that was in the last budget, and give you a little background on it. The governor inserted it into the budget last session and basically said just restoring bail bonds into Wisconsin. I didn't think that was appropriate, thought it was a policy decision. Asked the governor and the speaker at the time, Fitzgerald, to pull it back out so they could work on the issue a little bit in committee. Drafted a bill with a lot of protections in it. A lot of things you'll hear, you know, it's a corrupt system, you know, and things like that. We built in a lot of protections into this bill. Now, to give you the full day modern approach here is that it wasn't my motion, actually, to move it into the state budget, even though it was the language that I had written in my bill last session. I didn't actually submit it. I would like to still work on that as a standalone bill. I think it's something that needs to be out in the light of day. I think it's something that, you know, if it does go through in the budget and the governor doesn't veto it, I think there are appropriate protections in place, but I'd rather see it as a standalone bill as I wrote last session.
Justin, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's get into the Medicaid expansion money. Accepting that federal money would have resulted in about 85,000 more people being covered by Medicaid, and it would have cost $119 million less because of the federal money that would have come into the state. Scott Krug, why would you reject free federal money that would have provided health insurance for another 85,000 people?
You know, Glenn, I always love the phrase that people use, free federal money, like it doesn't come from the taxpayers and that it's going to be there forever. You know, on this issue in particular, if we did take the expansion and take the federal funds, it's for 3 years. And we've seen time after time after time when we create programs in the state of Wisconsin, it is almost impossible to back down a program after you've started it. So I think when we're looking at a sustainability approach to Medicaid funding, we've increased our budget $1.7 billion for Medicaid last session. We're increasing to $1.2 billion this session. Taking the federal dollars was a risk that I don't think the majority of my caucus was able to swallow, because after those 3 years, where does the money come from? And those are the tough decisions we have to make, is how do we keep funding those individuals that we took on instead of saying, hey, great, you had 3 years of coverage, now go off into the woods and find something else. So taking a longer-term approach to it, I mean, just trying to figure out where that money would have come from after that point, I don't think the state would have had that kind of money.
Mandy Wright?
Sure. Well, first of all, it is fully funded for 3 years. That's true. And then after that, it's 90% funded. So, sure, there's a small reduction in the funding. But to say that we should not accept federal funds is a bit disingenuous, because after all, we accept federal funds for many other things, particularly transportation, special education funding, and we're not rejecting those funds. So I just really have a hard time wrapping my mind around why we would spend more to provide less health care to people in Wisconsin.
Well, what we see is, though, is that in those other programs where we take federal dollars, there's a longer guarantee than 3 years and a funding decrease through time. Those are things that are sustainable.
But Scott, 90% coverage after the 3 years, that's practically 100%.
Who do you kick off then, Glenn? I mean, that's the question that we have, is who do you kick off of coverage at that point? We've spent, like I said, $1.7 billion.
Well, maybe the state finds 10%, the 10%.
I would love to see the state find another, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to fund another 10% of people. It's not there.
Maybe you shouldn't have cut those taxes.
Well, you know, that's the money that's going to come back in revenues, and we can make another decision down the road. I mean, when you take, you know, the federal programs with the strings attached, you're locked into their program and how they want to run the program. At the state level, it's our duty, budget after budget after budget, to watch out for those bottom line numbers. And I think that's the point we're making right now, is trying to say, you know, it's the way we're going to do it right now. Are we going to do it 4 years from now differently? Possibly. We have that opportunity to do so now, instead of taking a federal program and being at the whim of those dollars. I mean, that's the tough thing for us to swallow, is that lack of guarantee, that lack of consistency. We've addressed it in every other aspect of our budget, making sure that things are more consistent. There's less questions for business owners. There's less questions for whoever. But when you leave such big questions unanswered, it's tough for policymakers to make that decision.
It doesn't seem like a morally difficult decision to kick 84,000 people off BadgerCare now, so I'm not really sure why you would say in 3 years that that's going to be a tough decision for the Republican Party, because
that's hundreds of thousands in 3 years, though.
Yeah.
We have millions of people on this program now, and if you cut 10% off, I mean, that's a heck of a lot more than 80,000. Yeah, these are tough choices we have to make. But, I mean, that's what you have to do.
Well, the governor says that those 84,000 people will be able to receive insurance through the new exchanges under Obamacare. But the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau says that estimate is unreasonably optimistic. So what are we going to do with these people? Are they without health care?
No.
What do we do for them and their kids?
And I think the bigger question that we've had since the beginning is, are these exchanges even going to be up and running in time? And that's what we put into the budget, too, saying, hey, if the exchanges still aren't even up by January 1st, we're not going to kick anybody off. We're going to make sure that you still have the coverage you have right now. Yeah, there's a million questions out there about the Affordable Care Act. People can't answer a lot of questions about it right now. So it is muddied. It is a tough thing to decide. But, you know, in the end, you have to make the best short-term decision while looking out for your long-term financial situation. And I think that's what this compromise does, this in-between route that Governor Walker has taken, you know, guarantees coverage for people 100% and under, and allows those above to access the Obamacare exchanges when they're up and running.
Mandy, I'll give you the final word, then we've got to take a break.
First of all, the state could have chosen to set up the exchanges and had more control over how this program is administered. So, yes, there is a lot of confusion, but part of that is because we let that ship sail and we didn't take control when we could have. I also would say from touring both hospitals, Ministry and Aspirus, there are very serious concerns about people who do not have access to primary health care, and they see cost increase, and it's this buyout of the hospitals of over $70 million because they know they're going to see a lot of uncompensated care, which really shows us just where the priorities lie in this budget that we could have offered these people in our communities primary health care. Healthcare and opportunities for primary health care as well as jobs, but instead we are doing one of those deals where we compensate the hospitals instead of the people.
All right, we got to take a quick break. Mandy Wright, Democrat of Wausau, Scott Krug, Republican of Wisconsin Rapids. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got Democrat Mandy Wright and Republican Scott Krug, two regional state representatives, talking about the state budget, which is controversial, as all budgets are. And we'd like you to join the controversy. 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. If you would like to join the conversation. Let's talk about school vouchers. We have school vouchers expanding statewide. Proponents say it will increase competition among schools, which will improve overall quality of education and give people in areas of poorly performing public schools another option for their kids. Critics say it will take resources away from public education, create a two-tiered system that will hurt the poor. Let's start with Mandy on this, since you are a former educator.
Yeah, thank you. So I know the argument is that we're putting more money into our public schools, and we are, but we are not nearly addressing the $1.6 billion deficit from last session. The fact is that we can't afford two school systems, and I feel very strongly that this statewide expansion of vouchers is the beginning of the dismantling of public education, as Republican Senator Schultz has also said. We have 870,000 public education students. Representative Steve Kessel, which is the Republican chair of education in the assembly, and a long-term servant on his local school board, also voted against this budget, and he cited policy items as his reason. He also understands this drastic and destructive policy for our public school kids. I also think it's really important that we start to address just what is happening with vouchers and the lack of accountability there. So remember that this was only introduced about 2 weeks before the budget was actually passed. There was really no opportunity to debate it on the floor. There's very little real public input. And so I really question the methods, first of all, that statewide expansion of vouchers came about. Second, we've had time to see this program play out in Milwaukee and Racine. About 30 years it's been in Milwaukee, and we see no improvements in student achievement over the public schools. In fact, public schools on average score slightly higher than our voucher schools. And when we're taking public funds to fund private schools, we really should have some accountability measures. So One example from Adam Borsick of the Journal Times is a school called Sierra Travis Academy and its partner Travis Technology High School, which between them had 699 students last fall, have received almost $40 million in public dollars in recent years. And yet in this year's state test, no student at either school was rated proficient or advanced in either reading or math. 88% of fourth graders were rated minimal in reading. We have an excellent public school system, and this will definitely take away resources. We also have another example from Racine of St. John Fisher Academy.
Very quickly, we've got 15 minutes left of the show.
Sure. St. John Fisher Academy, which has spent $170,000 in state funds, and they had about 50 children. The teachers were not paid for 4 months last year, but they continue to get state funding. So there are a lot of problems with accountability with vouchers, and I think we really need to clean it up before we start spending $240 million.
All right. I have a phone call on the subject of vouchers. We're going to take the call, and then, Scott, you're going to get a chance to answer the caller. Let's go to Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Hello, Dave.
Hello, and hello, Scott. And I didn't get the name of the other representative from Wausau.
Mandy Wright.
Mandy Wright. Well, I want to congratulate everybody on the Skyward, keeping that in the state. That's great. And the halting of the high capacity wells temporarily. But I've talked to Scott before about this topic. Mm-hmm. No, I'm an educator. I'm a dedicated person. I worked really hard when I was an educator. I worked in NACUSA. And I saw program after program disappear. We used to have three librarians. We have zero. We used to have three tech ed teachers. We had the Project Lead the Way program where our students could get credits through the Milwaukee School of Engineering. We only have one tech education teacher. We had to drop it. We used to have five counselors in the school district. We have two. All the fat has been trimmed off the public school system. You know, and I realize they're putting some money back in, but it's ridiculous. They're putting $150 per student back into the public school system, and they're giving $1,400 to the voucher system, which, as your previous caller stated, is an unaccountable system. If you want to be a certified teacher in Wisconsin, you have to go through a teacher education program. You have to do student teaching. You have to survive. You have to take classes in methods. You have to take child psychology classes.
David, we got it. Let me give Scott Krug a chance to respond. Scott?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
David, it's good to hear from you again. I think the last time we ran into each other was in Grand Rapids, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah, good. I remember talking to you about this before. You know, when it comes down to the decision, like I mentioned, this is a local budget for me. I wanted to make sure we had some local wins. So when it came to school choice for me, I had to decide where to draw the line locally. And I think the biggest thing I heard from my school districts as we talked about voucher programs is, you know, I wasn't backing away from the fact that we do have a place for voucher programs in the state of Wisconsin. My school districts indicated to me that they wanted to see that accountability, and Representative Wright mentioned that as well. One of the things I'm proud to report is that all the voucher schools that would be certified or that are currently certified are going to be required to go under the state report card system like all public schools are. They're also going to be a component of the statewide student information system, which is more customer based for Skyward. Those are two things that I took away that were positives. More positives, I think, from this voucher program. You know, only 25 schools that are going to have the highest participation are going to be eligible as voucher schools. I don't see that happening possibly in Wisconsin Rapids, but if it does, I think the maximum with the income limits, the statewide caps, all the other requirements for these voucher schools, I think, you know, you're probably going to see 10 students in Wisconsin Rapids, if we get a school that's registered as a school this year, and they have to be able to be signed up by August 1st. A lot of the schools I've talked to locally in the private school sector have said they're not interested in it right now. Columbus High School in Wisconsin and Marshfield has said they're not quite ready for it right now. When you talk about a two-year budget, we have to look at those things that are going to impact us in 2 years, as well as the long-term picture. I think
let's not open up a door for two school systems in the state of Wisconsin. We already have a good school system.
You know, and if there weren't any caps, I don't think it would have been something that would have been palatable to the caucus. You know, now that you have the 500 cap for this year and the 1,000 cap for the next year.
And what about the year after that?
Dave, thanks for the call. We have to move on. And I want to move on to something that's another non-budget item
Glenn.
caused Yes.
Can I just in the past 2 years, Wisconsin Rapids has lost $70 million from their school budget, and they laid off over 30 full-time employees.
Most retired, actually.
Still, those are full-time employees who are gone, 30 who are not in the classroom anymore. So there are really serious consequences, and even if we don't have vouchers in Wisconsin Rapids, it will affect funding there. Thank you.
The subject I want to turn to, Mandy, is one that evoked a speech from you on the floor of the Assembly. The legislature passed a measure that would make women who want an abortion in this state first obtain an ultrasound, and it would require doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of their clinic. Now, you, Mandy, shared an emotional, very personal story of how you were raped as a child. You shared that with your colleagues on the Assembly floor. Why did you do that?
Yeah, on the surface, this bill seems benign, and it seems like, well, why would anybody object to an ultrasound? But I can speak from personal experience, and because I have been a sixth-grade teacher, and because I know people, kids at this fragile age, and I think of those 12-year-olds in my class, and, you know, God forbid they go through the same experience that I did, and they actually get pregnant. And now we have a bill which says they need a medically unnecessary invasive vaginal probe as an ultrasound, because it is an invasive vaginal probe in the first trimester. So if it's medically necessary, of course, I don't object. But they need that according to this bill. Now, if they want to opt out of it, because of rape or incest, that needs to be publicly reported. And the reason that I told my story is that it was never publicly reported. We always dealt with it in my family. I think I've come out quite healthy on the other end. And I absolutely respect my parents and my family's right to protect me as a very young child from the realities of all this. So I really, really disagree with this idea that we need to morally impose our ideas through legislation in a medical situation. I think that should be up to the family, up to the healthcare provider, up to the religious community, and all major healthcare providers in the state registered against this. It is medically unnecessary.
Did you really expect your story to change the opinions of the people in the Assembly who oppose abortion?
I certainly hoped it did, and I think it gave some people real pause. It really, we had been talking about it in such cold terms. I wanted to make it real, and now it's real for people.
Scott Krug, how did you vote on that measure?
I voted for the bill, and Mandy is absolutely right. When she told her story, it was heart-wrenching, it was jaw-dropping, and I really appreciate you taking the time and the effort to put it out there for everybody to have an understanding of. I don't mean to minimize it whatsoever in any comments that I make. But what I do want to help people realize is that those exceptions are in place for rape and incest. We're not saying that has to be reported publicly to the newspaper or anything, you know, to that magnitude. There are also exceptions for people who have different medical conditions because of a, you know, a varying medical condition from a pregnancy. You know, there is the option for either the transvaginal or the abdominal, you know, ultrasound at different points through the process. One thing that I've told my constituents from the beginning is that I'm going to fight for the rights of life, beginning of life, end of life, anywhere in between. And it's something we're not going to agree on. But again, you know, I can appreciate your point of view, and, you know, I appreciate the comments that you made on the floor. It's just something that I've said from the beginning is something that's just an issue for me to stay on the same side I'm on right now.
How do you respond to people who say, you know, that if you believe abortion is murder, the taking of a human life, that's a religious view, and you don't have the right to impose your personal religious view on everyone else?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, there's a lot of me that's more libertarian than there is Republican. And it is, you know, with the decisions that have come down from the courts recently, I've gone back and forth. You know, where is the line the government draws between morality and legality? You know, for me, honestly, I think abortion is one of those issues I'm willing to fight for. I think you know, when we get to the point where there can be certain exceptions for certain conditions, I'm okay with that. You know, that's kind of the room that I'll give this issue. You know, but the bottom line, you know, like I said, I've told my constituents from the beginning, it's, you know, a right of life to me.
Mandy Wright, I'm going to give you the last word here, and then this radio show is over. I didn't want to end on a heavy note, but that's how it worked out.
Well, to me, it's the right of life who the people who are already amongst us. I mean, there is no doubt in my mind that most 12-year-olds who undergo this and then are first to look at the image of a child or a fetus and listen to a description of it before they could have an abortion, especially after they've been forcefully raped, that would crush them. And I've worked with kids a lot in these situations at this age in particular, and I'm very, very concerned about the mental health of victims and standing up for victims and families and privacy.
All right. Very good. Mandy Wright, Democrat from Wausau, Republican Scott Krug of Wisconsin Rapids. I want to thank you both for being with us live here in this studio, and I also want to thank you for a very civil, respectful conversation between the two of you on subjects that often don't get much civility from the partisans involved. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. We also want to thank our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Amber Craning. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Thanks also to Jane Rittgert for her help with this program. Next Thursday, Route 51 takes the day off to celebrate the 4th of July, and we will be back 1 week later, Thursday, July 11th, at our new time in prime time, 10 o'clock in the morning. It's the same show in a new time slot, heard on the same Ideas Network stations. That's WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau and 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, WHAA 89.1 FM Adams Wisconsin Rapids, WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3, and we've got a new station up north, WHSF, which stands for Highland State Forest, 89.9 FM Rhinelander Eagle River. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next time, we are heading out of town.